QuickMed Claims presents the Board and Collar 10Q30. We pose 10 questions to emergency medical service leaders from across the United States on key matters affecting EMS nationwide. You'll find their unique responses interesting and thought-provoking, all in 30 minutes. Your host, QMC's Director of Client Services, Gary Harvat.
Good day, everybody. My name is Gary Harvat, and welcome to this great, I might add, great edition of 10 Questions in 30 Minutes, term 10Q30. We have a great program today, and joining us is Mike Richards. Mike is the Chief of EMS for Topton Community Ambulance, based in, of all places, Topton, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Mike. We're glad to have you.
Morning, Gary. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. Mike, this is your chance to shine, and I'm going to throw a few questions at you over the next 30 minutes, and you know, feel free to tell us anything and everything, because what we find with these programs is they're listened to all across the nation, and for that matter, even across the world. I'm not sure what the folks in Siberia are going to do with this, but regardless, it's open to anybody in the world. So it's funny how this really works, Mike, because you know, people listen to this and then they go like, wow, that guy's got a great idea for handling this or that. We need to adopt that at our service. And lo and behold, somehow or another, my phone will ring or you'll get an email, and next thing you know, you build this little network. You know, when we first did this program, several years ago, we do a couple different programs, and I thought this one's probably going to be a flop. It just, you know, probably will lose its momentum. But this has been one that has developed little networks within networks. You know, when I've had hospital-based programs on, they've received calls from other hospital-based programs. When I've had non-emergency groups on, same way. And it's been really a very cool experience. So your voice will be out there with the millions and the masses for years to come. You are now going to be officially famous, Mike. So I hope Topton, the community of Topton, appreciates what a celebrity they are now going to have.
A Berks County celebrity. What more could I ask?
Yeah, really, exactly. So, Mike, let's move on here. Again, thanks for joining us. Can you just, if you could, just give us an overview of Topton Community Ambulance, what your role is, what your service area is, any color you can add so people can identify with what you're managing there in your community?
Yes, sir. So currently I'm the chief of EMS. I've been in a chief's position for the past 5 years. I've been with the organization for almost 20. I started in 2004 and I worked my way from the ground up. So I kind of have a feel of what everybody's going through from a volunteer to the top. The organization itself has started in 1953 with a Cadillac in the basement of the local Legion. We cover 40 square miles. We do roughly 1,500 calls per year. In the last 2 years, that has grown tremendously, as I think everybody else has. And that is with one truck that we run 24/7, one ALS truck.
And how do you staff, Mike? Do you have BLS, ALS? How do you staff?
We have one paid ALS truck 24 hours a day. When things tick up, we have the ability to upstaff. We do own three trucks due to all the standbys and various things we do, but it's just that one ALS unit.
So I'm interested. You mentioned something just a few moments ago. You started with a Cadillac ambulance. Was that one of those orange ambulances with the high boy back that you could kind of hunch over in? And was it one of those? Because I'll be honest with you, that's where I started my career. And that's probably why my back's in the shape it's in today. But I love those things, and I see them every once in a while. They're kind of like collector's items right now, but I know they're still out there.
Yeah, no, it was in the early 50s, one of the original ambulances you see on the old shows.
Yep. Those are great, great, great. Good stuff. So, you know, one of the things, of course, within your organizational title is community ambulance. I'm interested because this has become such an important role with every emergency medical service, literally, that we've talked to and across the country. Reaching out to your community, how do you get your community to identify and understand you and hopefully contribute to help support you? Do you do anything different, anything from a fundraising standpoint, but overall, what ways do you outreach into your community?
So that's something I really try to improve over the last few years. Community involvement is huge for EMS, and I don't think there's enough of it. One of the things that we did to appeal to some of our larger municipalities is we put municipal representatives on our board. that gets us out there. They kind of have a beat on what's going on in the community. They can relay that back to us, and you know, we can make changes as necessary. Sure. We have an open door policy with our community. Anybody can come in. We have nothing to hide. We're very open about everything we do. We try to make every single community event in some way, shape, or form, whether it's just a chief or we can have a staff unit there, you know, to provide 911 services as well as just good community relations, because that's what this is all about, right?
Absolutely.
Serving this community.
Now, your community board, is that made up of just, you know, the public, or is it typically political or municipal officials, or a little of both? How is your board comprised?
So our board of governors is something else we've worked on over the years. Currently, we have three accountants on our board. We have two municipal officials with two of our larger municipalities that we cover. We have a member at large. We have a secretary who's also a community member. Every one of them has experience with nonprofit boards. One of the unique things here, though, is with the exception of two of us, none of them have any EMS experience. They run the business side of the operation.
You know, and I'm going to pay you a compliment, because with all due respect to all the good clients and community services out there, I think that is key, that you have people on your board who bring a different aspect other than EMS to the table. Because, you know, you and I are EMS guys, right, Mike? We see things through certain glasses, whereas these people who are in the community, maybe they're, you know, like you said, accountants or municipal officials, they see things that we don't see, and that brings a new, a more well-rounded aspect to any board. I firmly believe boards that are just comprised of EMS people are missing the boat. And I know I'm probably going out on a limb and saying that, and there's probably some good ones out there, no disrespect, but really, to this idea of having people from your community to support the ambulance service, to understand it, who've never been in the back of an ambulance, is surely a great idea. So my hat's off to you on that one. Good job.
Yeah, I think that works very well. And I think one of the understated things about EMS chief like myself, or an executive director, whatever you want to call them, is our ability to bridge the gap between the business side of the board, which is what they're there for. This is a business. Volunteer, paid, doesn't matter. It's still a business. And we bridge that gap between that business side and the healthcare side that we provide.
Absolutely. And you hit the nail right on the head. This, you know, every ambulance service in the United States today is in fact in some shape or form a business. You know, when I was involved in the early 70s, all volunteer, and you know, of course, much we didn't bill, there was no tax dollars, you know, everything was made from bake sales, fun bashes, gun bashes, things like that. And it is incredibly important to reinforce yourself within the community that you're in, because just simply running the ambulance calls and being there in someone's time of need, albeit great, but you need to do more to keep that community support up. So again, great, great work there. Along the lines of the community, you know, comes other EMS organizations, and I know we spoke earlier about Berks County, and I know a few folks out there. How do you work with the other EMS organizations around you? Not just from a mutual aid standpoint, but do you do anything collaboratively to, you know, kind of work within the county there cooperatively?
So one of the things I love about this county specifically is the interagency relationships that we have. I talk to at least one chief from another agency on a weekly basis. Ever since COVID started, something really cool came out of that. We started the Berks County COVID Task Force, which is comprised of every EMS agency in the county, as well as our health systems and some other various organizations to help us out. But we meet every week. You know, you don't find many places where all of your EMS chiefs meet every week on a regular basis and just discuss small problems. And I think that we really get ahead of the curve on things. I know through COVID itself, which I don't want to focus on, but specifically, we were ahead of the curve on everything. We had people from other counties, other regions coming to us, asking us how we're doing, what we're doing, and how we're staying ahead of everything. And that open communication among these other organizations is huge to me. You know, I learned so much. I'm someone that believes that you can learn something new every day. And I really do. You know, you get all that experience in one room, and it's amazing what happens.
Well, again, that's a great thing. And just a question for you, kind of to dovetail off that one, you know, God willing, COVID, we hope, is most of it's in our rearview mirror. this group that's meeting, do you guys think you'll continue to meet even long after this has passed? Have you developed a good sound coalition that may start to address other things outside the COVID arena?
Oh, 100%. We had always met on a monthly basis as a working group for our county. And I think the new group, we'll call it, we'll continue to meet well into the future, because we found that we can get so far ahead of issues, logistic issues, personnel, staffing, just every problem that you can find in EMS, we can solve it.
That's great, because it really, at the end of the day, it's all about serving the people who know nothing about ambulances or EMS or equipment. It's about, I dial 911 and I want somebody to show up in my time of need. And when you work cooperatively, and I'm hoping you'll agree, there's not that worry in the back of your mind that if I'm out, at 123 Main Street on a call, hopefully my neighbor who helps me, who I meet with once a month and who supports me as I support them, will be able to fill in the gap if that second or third or fourth calls comes in all at the same time. Because, we know how EMS goes. You sit for hours and then all of a sudden, bang, 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 they're all coming at you like a crazy person. So that's good, because, I think you'll agree that in many communities, there are boundaries. We don't talk to them. They don't talk to us, type of thing. And that's, again, very heartening to hear that you're doing that way. Hey, on the lines of clinical side, this equipment is changing every day and none of it's getting any less expensive. Tell us about maybe some of the clinical improvements that you've brought to your organization in recent years to better serve your public.
So that's one thing we're huge on here. If there is something new, I try to find it and we get it. We improvise it. Some of the medications, not to get into the nitty gritty, but like the ketamines, the etomidates, things like that. As soon as they come out and they're available, we're proactive. We get them on our trucks. We get into the trials that they have through the county, the state, whoever it is, and we get using them, because that's the only real way to prove their efficacy, I guess, in the long run. As far as other equipment, we keep our eye on things. We'll upgrade as we can, new heart monitors, the new litters, things like that.
What are you using for your cardiac monitors out there?
We're currently at LifePak 15s. I actually have to plug, we just got two brand new ones through a grant, which is wonderful.
15s, Mike?
Yes, sir.
I'll date myself. My first one was a LifePak 4. It was a big clamshell, weighed about 40 pounds. Once again, it's the reason my back does not work as well as it once did. So 15s, and of course, I'm sure they do all the monitoring and wash your car and everything else. I haven't touched one in years.
Yeah, it's amazing the technology and how far it's come, with just the regular 4 leads that you had back in the day, now to the 12 leads they do, the CO monitoring they do, and there's so much more room for improvement. I'm sure over the next 10 years, it'll be insane.
It's great, the care that we can now deliver to somebody's front doorstep, whereas, before that was, quickly throw them in the back of the ambulance and off you go to the hospital. And then when this all got started in the 70s, I worked with very few medications in my time. I think we had lidocaine, atropine, and bicarb were our big ones. And we thought we were the big men on campus with those three drugs. And I don't even know if they carry them anymore. I think bicarb's like obsolete. I don't even know if you have that in your drug box anymore. But
Every one of those is still in the back of our truck.
Really?
It is amazing the way things come and go. We do carry them all yet. And I think that's one of the gaps that needs to be bridged between agencies in the community, is it's not just a ride to the hospital anymore. It's a mobile intensive care unit coming to your house.
It sure is. It really is. How about as far as patient safety and your team safety? So much is heard on the news about, just somebody made one wrong step and was injured or hurt, and of course we see a lot of ambulance services investing in their team for safety's sake, not only with equipment but also with personal protective. Have you folks done anything with that there?
Yeah, we're constantly reviewing and improving safety procedures. I mean, of course, it's EMS. Lifting and moving is one of the biggest problems.
Yep.
And with the updated equipment, the electronic litters, We're looking into getting load systems, things to really improve provider safety. That's a constant daily chore in this field, and if you're not constantly investing in safety, you're not doing it right.
Yeah, and I think that's a when you talk to the medics that are out there, and again, I hope you'll agree that, you know, when they go move from one ambulance service to possibly another one, that's one thing that they're looking at. You know, a lot of these, you know, the guys and gals who are out there, you know, have families, and, you know, they want to make sure they provide the best care, but they don't want to jeopardize themselves when doing so. So I think it makes your service look more attractive from a retention standpoint and even recruiting standpoint to have those. And, you know, it's one thing to meet the state licensure and have all the equipment in the right places, but to go the extra mile is incredibly important, and it's nice to hear that that you've done that. Mike, how about as far as we don't have our head in the sand on this, and I think it's safe to say that every community has its share of problems with drugs and alcohol, and of course we hear so much, probably less during COVID, but up to COVID we heard so much about the opioid epidemic, and, you know, we're manning people at home and our police officers with Narcan now. Are you seeing much of that in your community? I mean, nobody's exempt from it, that's for sure, but didn't know how much you did see, and what if you're doing anything as a means of outreach and helping get the word out about, you know, controlling this epidemic, because it really is an epidemic.
Yes, unfortunately, the opioid epidemic hit us very hard prior to COVID. Probably 5, 6, 7 years ago, we made the national news. It was so bad in our area. What we did back then is this community formed a community task force. We also got involved with the countywide opioid task force, and we would go out and help do presentations, help do lectures. That did kind of slow because of COVID and the group meetings, but it's something that we're always invested in. We're always willing to educate. And it's really slowed. I'm tenfold in the last 3-4 years, the opioid crisis. It's still out there. It's always going to be out there, very unfortunately. But we do the best we can to manage it and keep the community safe.
Yeah, I think we'd be all kidding ourselves if we said it didn't exist in our community, because when we do that, then we're probably not doing the public justice by making a statement such as that. But that's great. I know there are some communities that we've talked to and recently that have said, you know, they've had very little, and there's others that are just literally running their tails off with these types of calls. So I don't know that, like you said, that'll ever go away, but it's one thing that you always have to be prepared for, because as you have seen, it affects, mom, dad, brothers, sisters, and even youngsters, and sad reality of the world we live in, but nonetheless, it's out there. So from the EMS standpoint, you have to be prepared when the bell rings that anything can and will happen. So good for you. We talked about some of the great things that you're doing, Mike, and that's wonderful, and it's appreciated hearing all these things. What do you see as your challenges moving forward, not only today, but like down the road, 3 years, 5 years from now? What do you see as your big hurdles that you have to prepare for now in order to get over them, later on in the years ahead of us? Because it's hard to keep an ambulance service alive. It's very hard.
It is. It's extremely difficult. And EMS is at an extremely crucial turning point. You know, as we speak, you look everywhere, you see articles daily, EMS in crisis, financial crisis, staffing crises. You know, there's more people getting out of EMS than there are coming through classes, unfortunately, at least in this area. And I'm sure it's countrywide from the people I've talked to. And I don't know how to solve that just yet. That's something that we're working on, you know, as a group, as an organization, and nationally. How do we get more providers into this field? You're starting to see a lot of ambulance services, and I'm sure you guys see it on your end more than I do, going out of business because they can't find staff, they can't get the funding. And do they affect each other? Yeah, you can't get that funding. You can't pay staff what they deserve. It's not the days of $10 an hour paramedics anymore. You just can't do it. So I think looking into the future, funding sources is one of the huge things, whether it comes on a tax base, on a county, federal, state, whatever. sandwich sales aren't affording $250,000 ambulances.
Yep.
You know, they're not affording the $40,000 heart monitors, the $30,000 litters that we need. So moving forward, we're going to need to address the funding situation. We're also going to need to address that provider situation. Unfortunately, I don't have an answer for that just yet, but I'm hoping I find one in the very near future.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, your answer is very similar to others that I've asked this question of. There's no magic wand here at all, and it's one that, you know, I know is a big topic when you go to conferences about, you know, retention and recruiting. But you're right, it's a tough field to recruit into, and COVID didn't help us with this either. It didn't at all. And along those lines, you know, how did you manage make your way through the COVID, pandemic and that we're still in? We're still in the, public health emergency. So I just always like to ask that question, even though it's one that I hope I'll just have to stop asking soon.
Yeah, the task force that I spoke about earlier, the Berks County COVID Task Force, was a huge help getting through. We were able to acquire PPE supplies. You know, from day one, our staff had the best PPE we could get our hands on. And we had some people in logistics in that task force, and that was their job. They went out and they acquired supplies. We got them passed out. At no point in time did we ever run out. Did we run low? Yeah, we did at times, but we never ran out. And our staff was always well protected, as well as our patients. So we're very fortunate in this area that we got through the pandemic as easy as we did.
Not easy to do, but the fact that you're still responding to calls and you've kept your staff healthy, this is once again a testament to the type of organization you run, because you mentioned it earlier, you know, COVID affected so many ambulance services, many of which were our clients, to the point that, you know, they literally had to shut their doors. And you know, a lot of people thought that during the pandemic that the ambulance services would be running the wheels off, and quite the opposite. You know, it slowed down. You were probably seeing a sicker patient who maybe waited because they didn't want to go to the hospital. And sometimes that, unfortunately, was too late. But, you know, the pandemic has taken its toll on virtually every business in America. And, of course, EMS is no exception to that rule, without any question at all. So it's good, again, that you've been able to keep your people healthy. You know, any recommendations for keeping your staff happy, Mike? What do you do? Like, I mean, you know, it's one thing to give them a paycheck, but is there anything else?
So I've had the ability over my career to work in very rural settings and the city setting as well, you know, in several different agencies. And I try to bring that all here and combine it. I still believe in the family work environment. I treat everybody here as family. Our doors are always open. We address any issue they have. And respecting employees, that's huge. I don't know the amount of people that have come here and said, I'm leaving my job because of management. You know, and to all the managers out there, treating your employees properly goes farther than pay. It goes farther than benefits. You know, when somebody comes to me and says, I don't mind taking a $6 an hour pay cut because I hear you're great to work for, that says something.
Sure.
And we're already losing employees, and unfortunately, we can't buy our way out of that. You know, that respect, that mutual respect, I think is a much bigger benefit than people really pay into now.
Well, I like your approach. I think that, you know, it's a tough world to be in right now, whether you're at work or at home, and it's, you know, whether it's on the news or outside with the pandemic, there's just so many forces coming against us that, you know, people need to be able to go to work and feel like they're appreciated, they're welcomed by their leaders, and, you know, that personally, that makes me do a good job when, you know, my boss says, hey, you know, great work on this or that, and, you know, you want to go the extra mile, but, you know, if you don't get that every once in a while, especially in this day and age, then people start looking, and again, there's not people out there to readily replace. I'm sure you probably don't, like most services, have thousands of applications that you can pick one out and hire a guy tomorrow. It's tough. It's really tough.
It really is. You know, and when you can find those good employees, you can retain them however you need to retain them. It's a huge bonus. It's one less thing to stress about, because we know the staffing is getting harder, the financial situation is getting harder, and the more we can do to retain that staff, the better off you really are. I don't go a day at this job without thanking the employees that are here. I really don't.
Well, you're a smart man. You're a smart man, and I bet those employees who are working for you probably have been there for a while, would be my guess, knowing what I know of you.
Yep, it's a shameless plug, but I have one of the best staffs out there.
Well, that's nothing wrong with stating that. I think many people are envious about that because it's tough to find good people, and it's tough to retain them for an extended period of time. So my hat's off to you. Mike, our time's pretty much coming close to an end here. Is there anything else interesting you'd like to tell us about your community ambulance? One thing I wanted to ask you is if people would like to get in touch with you, how would you like them to do that? I don't recommend you put your phone number out to the masses, but if they could email you, is there a way to do that, a general email that they might be able to contact you, or would you just rather have them call me and I could put them in touch?
No, they're more than welcome to email me, chief@toppinems.net.
Very good. Great.
They can access right through our website or our Facebook page. Well, anybody can feel free to reach out. I'll help anybody I can. That's my nature.
Well, that's good. Don't be surprised. Some of our folks that we've had on here have called me post-presentation and said, you know, they're in Maine and they got a call from somebody in Texas, and somebody in Texas got a call from somebody somewhere else. So it is, because, you know, your struggles are probably their struggles, and everybody's looking to build it a little bit better. And sometimes you have to look outside your own backyard, and this little program has helped to facilitate that. So, Mike, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been great. I think you'll find that if you go in to look at the downloads on this, the numbers will be ticking once we get it up there and running. So I'm sure we're gonna people are going to love to hear from you and appreciate what you have to say. So with that, I'll extend my thanks to you, Mike, and wish you a good Easter holiday ahead. Is there anything in closing you'd like to say?
Thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to working with you guys in the future.
No problem. No thanks needed at all. And to our listeners, thank you for taking time from your day to listen to today's 10Q30. We try to do these about every other month, so this is the April edition. So look for us to have another one out there, hopefully in June of this year. We know that we always like them. You always like them and have written me on many occasions asking when we're going to do more. So, again, my thanks to Mike at Topton Community Ambulance for doing this today and taking time from his busy day and his responsibilities there at Topton. So I'll just end by saying to all of you, hey, be safe out there.